This is Ned Ryan, and welcome to the History of the Constitutional Convention, Episode 3. In the years leading up to the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia in 1787, there are several events in a chain of sequences, one leading to another, with the ultimate destination being Philadelphia. Two of those are the Mount Vernon Conference in 1785 and the Annapolis Convention of 1786. Now, the Mount Vernon Conference came about because George Washington and others were convinced that the Potomac River and the trade that could be moved up and down the river from the coast to the inland states was vital for America to succeed economically. However, there was a slight problem. The Potomac was bordered by Maryland and Virginia, so there needed to be an agreement, a treaty, between the two states to decide upon navigation and trade on the river. Remember that under the Articles of Confederation, the 13 original states regarded themselves as 13 sovereign and independent nations. This meant that any attempt to make the Potomac River navigable would require a treaty between the sovereign Commonwealth of Virginia and the sovereign state of Maryland, much like any two European nations would make a treaty. Knowing that a treaty was needed, James Madison introduced a bill to the Virginia legislature naming himself, George Mason, Edmund Randolph, and Alexander Henderson commissioners to meet with a group of commissioners from Maryland to discuss this potential treaty. Now, I'll discuss James Madison in more detail later, but Madison would be one of the leading advocates for a new form of government. He realized, sooner than most, that the Articles of Confederation were a disaster and were ruining the United States. Now, Madison's bill called for the commissioners to frame such a liberal and equitable regulations concerning said river as may be mutually advantageous to the two states, and that they may make report thereon to the General Assembly. Thomas Johnson pushed the same bill through the Maryland Assembly, naming himself, Thomas Stone, Samuel Chase, and Daniel of St. Thomas Jennifer as commissioners. James Madison and Edmund Randolph, who had been appointed as Virginia delegates, were not informed by the Virginia governor, Patrick Henry, and therefore did not attend. Now, I don't know all the details of why that occurred, but it does seem strange that Madison, who introduced the bill into the Virginia Assembly, was not informed by Henry of the actual meeting. There could be any reasons for what might have happened, including simple oversight. However, as you will see in future podcasts, Madison and Henry hardly saw eye to eye on much and were not exactly friends. They would become passionate rivals during the constitutional ratification debates in the summer of 1788, and I tend to think that rivalry didn't just happen overnight. Now, if you're wondering why it's called the Mount Vernon Conference, but it actually took place in Alexandria, it was because the delegates initially met in Alexandria. But George Washington quickly invited the delegates to his nearby house at Mount Vernon, less than 10 miles away. They convened there on the 25th of March, 1785, with Washington presiding. One or two sources have suggested that Washington was merely the host and did not participate in the discussions. I would have to believe, however, that Washington was very much involved in the discussions because of his firm belief in the importance of the trade on the Potomac, and of course the fact that the conference was at his home. It is also recounted by eyewitnesses that Washington was obsessed with canals and would almost bore his guests to tears with his endless talk of canals and waterways. The delegates at the conference had been charged by their respective state legislatures with dealing with issues of commerce, fishing, and navigation in the waters of the Potomac and Pocomoke Rivers and the Chesapeake Bay. Let me highlight an important point here as to why this conference was important, especially for Virginia. On January 5, 1785, 3 months before the conference, the Virginia Assembly had approved the creation of the Potomac Company. The company was created for opening and extending the navigation of the River Potomac, which sounds nice on paper, even innocuous. There are 5 major falls on the river, which meant that the Virginia Assembly had created a company to build skirting canals around the falls on a river that actually belonged to another state. The state boundary of Virginia is the shoreline, not the center of the river. Since 1632 and Charles I's charter for Maryland, the boundaries of Maryland extended to the far shore of the Potomac. That was, of course, an issue that had to be dealt with, and the Maryland commissioners would have to agree that the river could be and should be used by Virginia. Now, I don't want to delve into the boring details of the conference, but in short, the Mount Vernon Conference was a success, despite the fact that Mason and Henderson of Virginia really had no legal authority to actually do anything. The Virginia Assembly had required at least 3 commissioners present, and of course Madison and Randolph had not appeared. Mason would later describe the conference and the details around it as a blundering business. But despite the minor technicality of lacking legal authority, the conference agreement would stand. It provided for reciprocal fishing rights, dividing the costs of constructing navigation aids between Maryland and Virginia, and it called for cooperation on defense and also in cases of piracy. It also called for commissioners to deal with any future problems that might arise between the two states. Now, the Mount Vernon Compact was signed and forwarded to the respective legislatures on March 28, 1785. When the compact reached the Maryland Senate, Thomas Stone introduced a further stipulation: that joint application be made to Congress for consent to form a compact for the purpose of affording and, in just proportion, naval protection to the Chesapeake Bay and Potomac River, which may be left unprovided by the Congress; that currencies should be regulated; that duties and imposts should be the same in both states; that commissioners should be appointed to regulate commerce; that Delaware and Pennsylvania should be notified and requested to join with Virginia and Maryland. The original compact and Stone's amendment were ratified by both states. However, there was a slight problem with all of this. Article 6 of the Articles of Confederation declared that no state could enter into a treaty with another state without the approval of Congress. It meant that Maryland and Virginia did not have congressional approval when the Mount Vernon Compact was signed, so it was, under the Articles, worthless and in one way, illegal. The entire situation created a great deal of angst in the Confederation Congress, and once again highlighted the severe inadequacies of the Articles. Madison and others decided there was a way to make it work: have another conference, this time with more states invited. So, in January of 1786, Maryland and Virginia invited the rest of the states to a convention in Annapolis in 1786 to consider how far a uniform system and their commercial regulations may be necessary to their common interests. As you'll see, the delegates to that convention met with the intention of addressing interstate commerce, but their discussions would lead much further than that and eventually lead them to a discussion about the very articles themselves. After the Mount Vernon Conference, Charles Pinckney of South Carolina recommended in Congress that the Articles of Confederation be revised. A committee was formed, several changes were recommended, including granting Congress power over foreign and domestic commerce, and enabling Congress to collect money owed by the states. But since the Articles stated that all 13 states would need to approve these significant changes to the Articles, Congress ended up doing nothing, because it doubted all 13 states would actually agree on the changes, so why waste time? So of course, in the end, nothing was done. However, James Madison and others, sensing a real chance at change, initiated a follow-up conference in Annapolis in 1786. It was really an interstate commerce convention, which sounds a bit dry to us today. The formal title of the meeting was actually titled "A Meeting of Commissioners to Remedy Defects of the Federal Government." Sounds like a snooze fest, but the title is telling. The Annapolis Convention was called to continue the conversation that had started at Mount Vernon. How would the largely independent 13 states actually interact with each other in regards to commerce and trade? However, there were some in attendance in Annapolis, with James Madison and Alexander Hamilton featuring prominently, who felt that a remedy to the defects in the federal government could be dealt with very effectively: do away with the Articles of Confederation and come up with a new form of government. I won't delve too much here into the role that Madison, Hamilton, and to a certain extent Washington played in the movement towards the new government and Constitution, but for the years prior to Philadelphia, some of the loudest and strongest voices calling for a doing away of the Articles were Madison and Hamilton. In some ways, these two were the energy pushing the issue, while Washington, in agreement with them, lent his support to them through his reputation. Five states, Delaware, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, and Virginia, attended the meeting in Annapolis, with a total of 12 commissioners in attendance. New York sent an Egbert Benson and Alexander Hamilton. New Jersey would send Abraham Clark, who was a signer of the Declaration of Independence, William Houston, who was later a delegate to the Constitutional Convention, and James Shurman. Pennsylvania would only send one commissioner, Tench Cox. Delaware sent three: George Reed, John Dickinson, and Richard Bassett, all of whom would later be delegates to the Constitutional Convention. Virginia sent Edmund Randolph and James Madison. New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and North Carolina had appointed delegates, but none attended the meetings in Annapolis, which would in essence limit any real productivity at the conference. With only five states represented, no real substantive changes could be made in regards to interstate commerce. The convention officially began on September 11, 1786, at George Mann's Tavern in Annapolis, and it lasted 4 days. The delegates first elected John Dickinson as the chair of the convention, then read their instructions from their respective state legislatures. They quickly agreed that with so few states represented, and with such differing instructions, a new convention should be called. So in short, they met to realize they could do nothing, and so they called for another convention. Sounds like a waste of time, but it really wasn't. You see, Hamilton and Madison and others decided that they would make the most of it and decided that if nothing substantive could actually be done in Annapolis, they would submit a report to Congress explaining the need for another convention with all 13 states present. The group unanimously appointed delegates Benson, Clark, Cox, Reed, and Randolph to draft a report to submit to the states and Congress. On September 13th, the committee presented its report to the larger group. It called for a new convention in Philadelphia, beginning the second Monday of May, 1787, to address not just matters of trade, but the general system of the federal government. I won't bore you with the details of the entire report, but this section is worth reading, and I quote, "There are important defects in the system of the federal government is acknowledged by the acts of all these states, which have concurred in the present meeting, that the defects, upon a closer examination, may be found greater and more numerous than even these acts imply. It's at least so far probable from the embarrassments which characterize the present state of our national affairs, foreign and domestic, as may reasonably be supposed to merit a deliberate and candid discussion, in some mode, which will unite the sentiments and counsels of all the states. In the choice of the mode, your commissioners are of opinion that a convention of deputies from the different states, for the special and sole purpose of entering into this investigation and digesting a plan for supplying such defects as may be discovered to exist, will be entitled to a preference from considerations, which will occur without being particularized. Under this impression, your commissioners, with the most respectful deference, beg leave to suggest their unanimous conviction that it may essentially tend to advance the interests of the Union, if the states, by whom they have been respectively delegated, would themselves concur and use their endeavors to procure the concurrence of the other states in the appointment of commissioners to meet at Philadelphia on the second Monday in May next, to take into consideration the situation of the United States, to devise such further provisions as shall appear to them necessary to render the Constitution of the federal government adequate to the exigencies of the Union, and report such an act for that purpose to the United States and Congress assembled, as when agreed to them, by them, and afterwards confirmed by the legislatures of every state, will effectively provide for the same." Now, if I had written that, I think I would have said this: "The Articles of Confederation is a very bad system of government. We need a national convention to discuss the matter with every state present, and we suggest the second week of May, 1787, in Philadelphia." End of report. On September 14, 1786, the delegates approved the report and adjourned. Congress took up the Annapolis recommendation on a month later, appointing a committee to consider the report. But it dallied. You might say it was suffering from an inferiority complex, since usually there were not enough members to actually reach quorum for the Confederation Congress. But finally, after intense debate, Congress on February 21, 1787, endorsed the proposed Philadelphia Convention. To show the interest level in a new convention, seven states had already appointed delegates to the Philadelphia Convention even before Congress approved it. The remaining states, except Rhode Island, appointed delegates by May of 1787. And as I've already mentioned, Rhode Island refused to appoint delegates to the convention, and so only 12 states would actually be present in Philadelphia. In next week's podcast, I want to talk exclusively about James Madison, one of the primary forces behind the Constitutional Convention.